Okay.
Okay, so as, oh, do, is there a pointer? Oh, here. So as many people have commented, it's wonderful to have an opportunity to be in Paris in the spring. Some of it's been spring. And it's also nice to be here with, well, people who are interested in cuprates and strongly correlated systems. My family, of course, families also quarrel, but at any rate, what I'm going to do is I'm going to discuss the role of quench disorder in vestigial nematicity, and I'm going to discuss this more or less as a problem in statistical mechanics with reference to some of the materials that we care about, but mostly this is going to be a theory talk. So what I'm going to do is, I mean, there are too many things going on, so I have to take a pass through what I'm going to focus on. And the perspective in this talk is that we're going to approach the problem as a problem in effective field theory. The emphasis will be on broken symmetries, on sharp distinction between phases of matter as defined by long-range order, and the long-distance emergent properties of the systems. These aren't the only questions that are interesting or important, obviously, but these are simply the ones that I'm going to address today. So now let me define the terms that appear in the title of this talk. So I'm going to define vestigial order is what happens when there's a sequence of phase transitions separating some fully ordered broken symmetry state from a disordered symmetric state, such that these intermediate phases have patterns of broken symmetry that are vestiges of the broken symmetry of the fully ordered state. So the electron pneumatic order that appears in the title simply means electronic order that breaks the point group symmetries of the crystal, and that arises not primarily due to lattice effects, but primarily as an emergent property of the electron fluid in the crystal. And finally, the role of quench disorder is always important in these cases, and the reason is that when the symmetries that are being broken are not gauge symmetries like a superconductor or spin symmetries like a magnet, but spatial symmetries, then the effects of quench disorder, even in very clean systems, are always qualitatively important. So to illustrate this, I'm going to consider the properties of a concrete model. This model is motivated by some of the density wave phenomena seen in the cuprates and in the iron-based superconductors. But I'm going to address it. So I'm going to consider what happens if I have an incommensurate charge density wave. So here would be the charge density. And by charge density, I mean any scalar quantity. And it's got some average value, and then it's modulated, and these fields, psi x and psi y, represent the effective fields that are slowly varying. The rapid variations are encoded in the ordering vectors, which can be in the x or y directions. And now I can talk about a stripe-ordered phase if, for instance, psi x develops an expectation value and psi y doesn't. That's a stripe-ordered phase. This order parameter is also going to play a role. The difference in the mean squared value of psi x minus psi y, that's obviously going to be non-zero in a stripe-ordered phase as well. There's a checkerboard phase where the order has equal magnitude in both the x and y directions, and where this quantity is exactly zero by symmetry. And then finally, we'll talk about a pneumatic phase in which the charge density wave order is gone, so the expectation value of these amplitudes is zero, but the mean squared value of psi x is different from the mean squared value of psi y. And so that's the sense in which the pneumatic phase is a vestigial stripe ordered phase or charge density, yeah. So people have a hard time often having an intuitive picture of this. So I wanted to look for pictures of what a fluctuating stripe pneumatic phase would look like. I searched on the web, on the internet, under a snapshot of a fluctuating stripe phase, and I got this, which I particularly liked because it was accompanied by the comment, stripes are one of those revolving trends frequently fluctuating in and out of style. Well, stripes are officially in again, thanks to, well, it, they didn't acknowledge Andrea's beautiful analysis of the X-ray data. These are, anyway, stripes, fluctuating stripes that are generally oriented vertically. Here are some fluctuating stripes that are generally horizontal. Here's a schematic of what a fluctuating stripe pneumatic phase might look like from an old paper of Eduardo and Vixen mine. But here's the nicest picture I have of this. So this is a snapshot, in some sense, of a vestigial pneumatic ordered phase. What you can see is that there are local regions in which you sort of have stripes dominantly going this way and dominantly going that way. They've been colored red where they're dominantly stripes in the x direction, which is that way. This is actually data that I'll come back to. It's similar to some of the data that Seamus showed. This data comes from Jenny Hoffman. But what you can see here in this picture is that this snapshot has a dominantly red hue to it. So although there's no long-range order of the charge density wave, this is a picture of what a snapshot of a fluctuating pneumatic phase would look like. Good. So when we do statistical mechanics, we emphasize the symmetries of the problem. This incommensurate charge density wave has a number of symmetries. It has a symmetry related to the continuous translation symmetry of the incommensurate charge density wave in either the x or y direction. That is to say, I can multiply psi x or psi y by an arbitrary phase without changing the free energy. There's also a Z2 symmetry having to do with the interchange of the x and y directions. So this problem has an O2 cross O2 cross Z2 symmetry, and we write down some effective Landau-Ginzburg theory, which I'll get to in a minute, which respects these symmetries. We could play similar games starting from a commensurate spin density wave. Commensurate spin density wave would look like this. It looks very similar, except that psi is now a vector in spin space, and qx and qy are commensurate values, so psi x and psi y are real vectors. And the analysis of this has a SO3 cross Z2 symmetry, and this was analyzed by my collaborators and me, and by Subir and his collaborators in the context of the iron nictides, to show that it could give rise to a vestigial ordered pneumatic phase. And we could have done an incommensurate spin density wave as well. All of these things have a lot of similarities. Let me focus on this particular example of the incommensurate charge density wave. So we write down some effective Landau-Ginzburg theory of this, more or less dictated by symmetry. All of the terms are pretty familiar. In order to solve this, rather than thinking of this as being a two-component field with a real and imaginary part, we can promote it to be an ON field. And then we have a parameter that allows us to solve the problem exactly, and the n goes to infinity limit. Or we can just say we're doing some particularly good mean field theory on this, which becomes exact in the end, goes to infinity limit. And so that's what Lymeny and Gilles Tarjus and I did. And the one parameter I want to point out here is there's a parameter in this Landau-Ginzburg theory called gamma. If gamma is positive, it means that if you have stripes in the x direction, a density wave in the x direction, you don't want it in the y direction. So for gamma positive, the ground state of this model is stripes. And for gamma negative, it means that you would like both x and y density waves to coexist. So for gamma negative, you get checkerboards. All right, so the phase diagram of this thing, I guess I should have pointed out one other thing. I'm considering this to be a quasi two-dimensional system with weak coupling between nearest neighbor layers. So here's the phase diagram we got for this. It's got a stripe-ordered phase at low temperature. It's got a homogeneous isotropic phase at high temperatures. If the system is reasonably three-dimensional, that's the only two phases that we get. But we find an intermediate vestigial pneumatic phase if the system is sufficiently two-dimensional. This follows for a very important reason that in the strictly two-dimensional system, the ordering of the stripe phase, which breaks a continuous symmetry, is highly suppressed, whereas the ordering of the pneumatic order parameter, which is basically the Z2 part of the symmetry I've been talking about, it's an Ising order parameter, and so it's hardly suppressed by low-dimensional fluctuation effects. So this existence of this intermediate pneumatic phase is a robust feature of any version of this problem, so long as the system is low-dimensional enough. Okay, so that's an introduction to why we think we might get vestigial pneumatic phases. A pneumatic phase has an order parameter that at the end of the day is any traceless symmetric tensor quantity. For instance, if epsilon is the dielectric tensor, then the pneumatic order parameter would be the traceless piece of the dielectric tensor. It also is a form of quadrupolar ordering, if that language is more familiar to you. And in a crystal, in the continuum, this can have its principal axes in any direction, and so it's got some continuous degrees of freedom associated with it. But in a crystal, this thing is oriented by the crystalline axes, and so it becomes an Ising order parameter. It becomes that either the dielectric constant is bigger in the A direction or the B direction. Okay, good. So that's the introduction. How am I on time? Great. Okay, good. So that's how vestigial pneumatic phases arise. Now, why might you be interested in them? Well, there are many reasons you might be interested in them, but one reason that's particularly striking of late is that pneumatic phases have shown up in interesting, highly correlated systems. That is to say, systems that people are studying for reasons that have nothing to do with looking for pneumatic order. And so it's somehow a very fundamental and minimal form of ordering that highly correlated systems can show. This has shown up at partially filled Landau levels for all Landau levels from 2 on up. It's shown up in strontium ruthenate. It's shown up in various 4F materials. It's shown up very nicely. There's beautiful electron microscopy showing how pneumatic phases show up as vestigial stripe order in some manganites. But what I'm going to do, since everybody here has talked about the cuprates, is just present a little evidence of a pneumatic phase in the iron-based superconductors that comes from the lab of my colleague Ian Fisher. So here's the phase diagram of one of the iron-based superconductors. X is the concentration of cobalt, T is temperature. There's this striped spin density wave phase, which breaks both spin rotation symmetry and fourfold spatial rotation symmetry. Notice that there are sort of ferromagnetically oriented spins along the y direction and anti-ferromagnetically oriented spins along the x direction. So the anti-ferromagnet breaks not only spin rotation symmetry, but also the C4 lattice symmetry. And then you can see here that sometimes there's a narrow range where there's a phase where actually the C4 symmetry of the lattice is broken due to spontaneous symmetry breaking before the spin density wave occurs. So that's an example of a vestigial pneumatic phase. Now here's what Ian did with this. He applies uniaxial strain. Uniaxial strain is the symmetry breaking field that's conjugate to pneumatic order. And he measures the induced resistive anisotropy. Now below this line, which is the structural phase transition, there's going to be resistive anisotropy independent of the strain because the system is orthorhombic. But above this line, the resistive anisotropy is the response of the system to the applied strain. And what you can see immediately from this is that there's a very large induced resistive anisotropy. The system over a broad range of dopings has a very large pneumatic susceptibility. And this is the thing he went to quantify. So what he measures is the following. First, he defines a dimensionless measure of the electronic pneumaticity of the system, which is the difference in the resistance in the x direction minus the y direction normalized by the average resistance. So that's a dimensionless measure of the resistive anisotropy. He applies uniaxial strain, which is also a dimensionless quantity. And he defines the pneumatic susceptibility to be the derivative of the pneumatic order parameter with respect to the symmetry breaking field evaluated at zero symmetry breaking field. Because this quantity is dimensionless, you would generally expect it to be of order one, and it is of order one in most metals. But here you can see that as you cool this material down toward the structural transition, this response function gets to be like 100. It's huge. And moreover, it's clearly diverging as the temperature is decreased. It looks like it would diverge just a little bit before the structural below the structural transition if the structural transition hadn't happened. In fact, what they've done is to quantify that by fitting this to a Curie-Weiss law. And what you find here is as a function of temperature, as a function of doping, you can see that this susceptibility fits nicely to a Curie-Weiss law. Here is the inverse susceptibility as a function of temperature, which you can see extrapolates to zero just a little bit below the structural transition. So that little bit of offset is how much the structural transition enhances the pneumatic ordering temperature. The extrapolated temperature is some estimate of what the pneumatic ordering temperature would be if you could clamp the lattice and not let it respond at all. So this was his proof that the pneumatic tendency is not primarily a lattice effect, but is primarily an electronic effect. But the other thing that comes out of this is that miraculously, right at optimal doping, which is here, this Weiss transition temperature, this extrapolated transition temperature, appears to be very close to zero. And so they wanted to see whether this was a generic feature of the iron-based superconductors. And so here are various electron-doped superconductors. Here's isovalently doped superconductor where phosphorus is substituted for arsenic. Here's hole-doped superconductors. And here's an iron chalcogenide superconductor, which doesn't even have a magnetic phase close by. And in all cases, at optimal doping, he sees an enormous pneumatic susceptibility. And in all cases, that pneumatic susceptibility seems to be diverging towards a Weiss ordering temperature, which is close to zero. Here's the most beautiful version of this. The phosphorus-doped 122 is supposed to be the cleanest of these materials. Here, this Curie-Weiss fit to the susceptibility is absolutely spectacular. And as you can see, the susceptibility to very good approximation is a pure power law in temperature. It looks like some sort of a quantum critical pneumatic susceptibility with no intrinsic energy scale in it, just the temperature. Okay, so this is exciting. First place, we find that the pneumatic susceptibility is universally large. The pneumatic critical temperature seems to extrapolate close to zero for optimal doping. And, well, okay, that gives me some optimism that there may be some causal relation. Okay, so let me turn to the last point of the talk, which is the role of disorder. So the problem is that random field problem is relevant to problems of spatial symmetry breaking. And so although people don't like to talk about disorder because we've spent 30 years trying to make these materials as clean and perfect as possible, the truth is they are disordered to some extent, and disorder is highly relevant when we're talking about spatial symmetry breaking. So let's look at this same model that we discussed before in the context of vestigial symmetry breaking, but now let's ask about the effects of quench disorder. And so for this point, I need to remind you of two well-established, even rigorous results from statistical mechanics, which is that if we have some pure system which can exhibit a broken symmetry state, so S is some generalized order parameter, which I'll call a spin, and if it couples to quenched randomness linearly in the order parameter, that's called a random field. And what we know is that two spatial dimensions is the lower critical dimension for discrete symmetry breaking, for Ising order parameters. So it means you can't have broken symmetries in two or less dimensions. And for continuous symmetries, like in an incommensurate density wave, four is the lower critical dimension. So strictly speaking, there isn't an incommensurate density wave. I'm not going to talk about the possible subtlety of a Bragg glass. So what does this mean for the phase diagram of this model we've considered? Well, so let's assume we're in the regime where for the pure system we have a striped ground state and it's quite two-dimensional. Say, we'll pick parameters along here in the phase diagram I've already shown. And now let's ask, what happens if we turn on the effects of quench disorder? Okay, so we're going to consider the effects of quench disorder. We know that we can't break continuous symmetries. We know that we can break discrete symmetries. And therefore, it won't surprise you that the phase diagram looks like this. The big thing to notice is that now the vestigial phase, notice this starts from the statement, suppose the ground state was a striped incommensurate charge density wave, In reality, the only phase transition that's left, and certainly the only quantum phase transition that's left when the effects of disorder are taken into account, is the pneumatic phase transition. The vestigial pneumatic order is the only true order we can get. Here's the phase diagram. If the ground state was checkerboard, then when we turn on disorder, there are no phase transitions. So now I come back to this picture I showed. This is from Jenny Hoffman. This is actually STM on bismuth 2201. This is a very big field of view, 650 angstroms by 650 angstroms. This is, in Seamus's notation, a Z-map. And then it's been Fourier filtered to look at the structure that gives rise to the peaks near Q star star, again in Seamus's notation, of 3/4 zero and 0 3/4, and then put back into real space and colored red and blue depending upon whether there's more amplitude at 3/4 zero or 0 3/4. And what you see is that there is enormous structure here on all scales. What they've concluded, in fact, is that the patterns that you see can be well understood as being the surface of the two-dimensional surface of a three-dimensional random field Ising model near its critical disorder. The important point is that the correlation length then is larger than the field of view. All right, good. There are a few things about that I want to then end with about pneumatic order. Pneumatic order is possible even in the presence of quenched randomness, and so is a pneumatic quantum critical point. Pneumatic fluctuations enhance superconductivity in any channel. This is easy to prove in weak coupling. In strong coupling, nobody knows how to do anything. Quantum critical fluctuations are the most efficient way of destroying Fermi liquid theory, in the sense that they destroy Fermi liquid behavior not just at hotspots, but on the entire Fermi surface. And I think I had one mother. Good. So I'll stop here. I've gotten through about a third of my talk.
Okay, let's thank Steve again.